Good afternoon, Tucson. 12:04 on the Buckmaster Show. Ray Allen filling in for the vacationing yet returning Bill Buckmaster. He's probably actually in a plane right now, headed back to Tucson. So we're happy for Bill. He's going to be all rested up next week, and he still gets the three-day weekend after being gone for a week. Honestly, I feel like it's not fair that he gets to do all this. Come on. All this vacationing? No, I'm just kidding. It's totally fair because Bill does a lot of hard work, and we're happy for him to be on vacation. We're looking forward to having him back, though. So, Bill, if you're flying or if you're getting back just now, we're ready for you to come back. Anyway, we're having a good show today. We're going to start off with talking about education for the first half, and then we're going to move into a new book that's out. We're going to interview someone about a person that ended up surviving the Nazis and all kinds of things. It's going to be fun. Then we'll talk about the Desert Museum at 45 after the hour. But let's start off now with Dustin Williams, Pima County School Superintendent. Welcome, Dustin.
Ray, glad to be here. Glad to be with all the listeners. And I'm sure Bill is in some exotic area coming back like he normally does.
Oh, yeah. He's always doing something fun.
Waterfalls and pythons.
Yeah. That's what he does. And then he's probably flying over that ocean. Have you ever been to the Caribbean?
I have not.
Well, you got to go, because when you fly over the ocean when you're coming home, it's the bluest water you've ever seen. It's incredible. It's beautiful.
I was in Cozumel, and it was pretty blue there.
I'm sure. Okay, well, let's get to the topic at hand, Dustin. The budget, the state budget, they're talking right now a lot. We're expecting to maybe have some results. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, the family feud has begun, and okay. We have the partisanship is definitely in full works. We've got some good money coming in, and we've got some tax cuts out there going back and forth. Okay. But for the good part is the governor's 20 by 2020 is on pace to happen for education, and that's positive.
Good.
We got a lot of money going into the rainy day fund. We got a lot of money owed to education. So when you're putting $500 million into rainy day fund and you still owe education, call it a couple billion dollars in capital, and you're gonna get both sides sort of
arguing a bit over it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Going to be happy. So, and then you throw some tax cuts. Period. In there, about $380 million.
Yep.
And that's where it gets a little bit heated.
So let's talk about some of the things that are proposed, and then we can get into the hangups on the budget. There is the 5%, as you said, teacher raise, which keeps us on pace for the 20 by 2020 deal that the governor put forth last year, right?
That 5% is going to equate to about $165 million for this year.
Good.
And
okay.
That's on pace.
Good. And so I think people are pretty happy with that. Am I correct?
Absolutely. The number one thing that we've got here in the state for education, one of our biggest concerns, is the teacher shortage. We've got about 2,000 vacancies as we speak. We got about 4,000 unqualified personnel in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
And so to strengthen this industry, we got to start getting some champions in the classroom and filling not just the seats for the students, but for the seats for the personnel, and that's the teachers.
Sure, yeah. And I was going to ask, I've always thought about those vacancies, and is the answer only money to making sure that we have more teachers in Arizona?
Well, it's a little bit both. So okay. you've got money, and then you also have just the professionalism of that profession.
Sure.
And so you kind of put both of those together, and that's what kind of gets eyes to wander. So if you look at the starting salary right now for a nurse,
mm-hmm.
They're going to be coming in right around $55,000. If you look at the starting salary for a teacher, they're going to come in right around $35,000.
Got it. And frankly, that's not enough, I guess.
Well, with the lack of teachers that we have and the shortages that we see, the market's determining that. And so that's our biggest concern. We really got to fill these, we got to get these teachers in these positions because it's so important to build this consistency with these kids. So if they're having substitutes all the time, you're having classroom management issues, you're having trust issues with, students wanting to take risks and ask questions. Not that they're not going to ask everyday normal questions, but when there's a trust level in the classroom where that student really has bonded with a teacher, boy, you can make some strides.
You can. Now let's talk about there's more money going to school safety and counselors, correct? Now, I understand that there is kind of a deficit in counselors in schools as well.
The talk is so the deficit for school counselors, that's a big one. So we're last in the nation.
Wow.
So we're one counselor per 900 kids.
Wow.
The recommended national average is one counselor per 225 kids.
Mm-hmm.
So in the budget, the governor has gone ahead to put in school resource officers and then also counselors. And so we're looking somewhere around $6 million this year. But the problem is you equate that to a salary around $40,000 or around $42,000. You're only looking at bringing in maybe 125 counselors.
Sure. And what I understand, correct me if I'm wrong, the districts can decide whether or not they get a school resource officer or a counselor, correct?
Yeah, and that's what they got to do. They got to choose. And so
it
puts the schools in a tough predicament. But most importantly right now, everyone has to understand that those counselors are just really a backbone of the school. I mean, they can come in and talk about all sorts of issues with students and get to a student that might be having feelings of depression, anxiety, just all sorts of really unique strategies that can benefit these kids. And so we got to start getting more in there.
Yeah. We're talking with Dustin Williams, Pima County School Superintendent, and we're talking about the proposed budget. We should say that because none of this is official yet. And they're like we said in the beginning, they're up there talking and trying to hash some of this stuff out. One of the other issues that is out there is money for repairing schools and keeping up the facilities of older schools, correct? And building new schools. And that's one of the things that was mentioned in the budget as well.
That's absolutely right. That's called your capital dollars.
Mm-hmm.
So all the stuff that you need in a school. And that's where when that recession hit, those dollars just stopped. And we have not seen those dollars come back. And so that's where you get that big pot of money that's really owed, because it's just like anything. You gotta spend a little money to take care of the things that need care. And so if these buildings don't get updated, lighting, air conditioning units, heaters, carpets, mm-hmm. paints, books, computers.
Sure.
Next thing you know, you've just got a whole huge deficit of stuff that's needed, and that's where we are. And so when we see the rainy day fund, you have to look at it the governor's way and say, makes sense sometimes to put as much as you can away. I get that. Mm-hmm. I think we have to recognize that.
Sure.
But maybe we could split the difference somewhere in there and start chipping away at this capital problem that we have, because schools have got some serious needs.
That makes sense. One of the other things I saw in the budget was more money for charter school oversight. Looks like they want to help to have more people looking over charter schools. Is that a good thing in your mind?
I think it's a great thing. I think we finally are starting to get the dialogue of charter reform. And when we talk about charter reform, we're really talking about how do we help these schools, and how do we help them with two big things. How do we help them be more transparent, and then how do we help them be more accountable? We want to have them with the exact same standards that district schools do,
mm-hmm.
but unfortunately there's a difference in there right now. So to have some more oversight, which would be help to maybe correct issues before they get too out of hand, I think that would be good. I know we had some bills come through the legislature where we were going to actually have some written language on charter reform.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, that did not pass. That's a missed one for all teams. I think you need a starting point. I think one of the issues we have is we've got this, these partisans get involved and they really separate, you see it at the national level, and you also see it at the state level.
Of course.
And we've got to start getting a happy medium sometimes in here. And, we're not going to get everything you want in these bills. And I just wish that sometimes we could get just a happy medium sometimes to get a starting point.
So for you, the answer there is some compromise on both sides?
I 100% agree with that.
Yeah. Okay. And then one of the other issues is performance-based, getting the money sent to schools based on performance, correct?
That's right. So we've got a results-based funding is what that's called.
Mm-hmm.
It's somewhere around 39, call it $40 million.
Sure.
It looks like they're going to add another $30 million to that.
Okay.
Results-based funding, in my personal opinion, that's a flawed system. I think we should reinvest that money into those teaching shortages, reinvest that into those counselors,
mm-hmm.
And not base money off of a letter grade system. And if you look at the statistics of all of the results-based funding, you're seeing that it's really not going to the schools that truly need the actual help.
Sure. So that was the kind of the basic highlights of all the things that are going on, for the most part in the proposed budget that I saw. Is there anything else that you saw that's going on in there that you would like to touch on before we hit the break?
You know, not right now. It's going to be interesting to see how this pans out at the end.
Possibly tonight, right?
That's right. But this is the second year that we're actually seeing some dollars come in,
mm-hmm.
That are helping our schools.
Yeah.
We just want to make sure that we can, you know, agree on these bipartisanship issues like accountability, transparency, mm-hmm. results-based funding, the whole thing. So that's what I look forward to seeing here.
Okay, good. All right, well, we have to take a break right now. But before we go to the break, we have to talk about one of Bill's favorite places. It's lunchtime, and if you're driving around up in the foothills, you might want to go to Mona's Danish Bakery. Mona's is located on the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. They're the perfect place for you to go and hit up some lunch right now. They also have something that they're doing. Let's see. It's the Danish Kringle. I've not had the Danish Kringle yet, but I want to try it because it sounds incredible.
This is I believe this is one of Bill's favorite pieces of food.
It is. I think it is. And I think this is what keeps bringing him back to Tucson, actually. I'm just kidding. No, there's a lot here for him, but he does like the Kringle. It's like the little cherry on top for him. But if you haven't had it, you should go check it out. Also, they have hot breakfast there, made to order, and lunch, of course. Go to monasdanishbakery.com and buckmastershow.com for a link to Mona's Danish Bakery. We're going to be right back talking to Dustin Williams, the Pima County Schools superintendent, here on the Buckmaster Show. Now taking a break. We'll be back after this.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. The Regional Transportation Authority has a 35-member Citizens Advisory Committee working to identify transportation priorities for the region and will be seeking public input on those priorities before too long. These priorities will help guide development of an RTA continuation plan. The current RTA plan and half-cent excise tax will continue through June 2026. To learn more, please visit rtamobility.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. I'm passionate about travel, visiting over 100 countries in all 50 states. And when I'm ready to take off, I fly from Tucson International Airport. With 9 airlines flying nonstop to 22 destinations and easy one-stop connections, I can get virtually anywhere in the world. It's close by, convenient with competitive airfares, and there's no long drive coming back home after a long trip. Travel smart and fly Tucson. Check out flytucson.com. Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100. As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
It's 12:19 on the Buckmaster Show. Ray Allen filling in for the vacationing and soon to be returning Bill Buckmaster. He'll be back after the 3-day weekend that we're all about to get. He had about a 12, 13, 14-day weekend, which I'm fairly jealous of, but we're glad to have him back next week. Look forward to his show. I think he's in the air right now, and we're happy for him. We have Dustin Williams, the Pima County School Superintendent, with us. That's some good music, huh?
Yeah, I was digging that right there.
Yeah, America? Is that what it was? I think it was America.
Yeah, I think it was.
I like it. All right, so let's talk about what the Pima County School Superintendent does and what we do in the office. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on, huh?
Good question. We do a lot of stuff in that office, but if we want to break it down just to kind of summarize it for listeners and make it easy, let's put it into three parts. First part is all the admin pieces.
Yeah.
So we're going to do all the finances, the bonds, the overrides, the Fed money, the state money, local money, any money that comes through this state, comes through our office. It's going to be a total of about $1 billion a year that we'll manage and allocate to all the 17 school districts that are out
wow.
there. We do all the elections for all the bonds and overrides as well. Also, all of the elections for the school board candidates. So on non-election years, your elected county school superintendent, Dustin Williams, or whoever else, Maricopa, wherever you're going to be, mm-hmm. they're the appointing authority for school board members at the district schools.
Okay.
So that's the big admin piece. You also want to put in all the certification of teachers, about 4,000 a year. And then you're also going to do all the homeschool community affidavits.
Oh.
So they'll come in and do all their paperwork with us. And that's a really, really large part of the office, heavily administration. When it comes to local control of schools, we have zero local control of how a school wants to operate.
Why is that?
That is done by your elected school board members and the superintendents.
At the district level.
At the district level. So if someone comes and says, hey, we want to change something with XYZ district, we'll help facilitate either a meeting or we'll put them in the right direction of who to contact. And that generally starts with usually a principal of a school, or you go right to school board members and then the superintendent, and then that's how those local initiatives get taken care of.
Is it like that in most areas around the country?
Yeah, this is pretty much in
how it goes.
And that's why you have school boards and that's why they're implemented there. So one school district, however, is ours, where we have full local control, and that's called the accommodation district.
Hmm.
This is another part of the office which is unique. So we're in charge of all the schooling for the kids that are located in the juvenile detention center and then also located in the jail. And we've got about 100 kids there right now in total.
Wow. And so do you guys also oversee, because you said homeschooling, do you also oversee the charter schools as well?
We have no oversight on the charter schools, nor do we do any of their money.
Really?
No.
Okay.
So the charters, private schools, And again, no local control in the district schools also.
Yeah.
But for the money part, we do all the money part for the district schools.
Okay.
Now, where we do get involved with charter schools and private schools and work together is really the third big thing what our office does is we're a service agency.
Yeah.
And so since we're a nonprofit government agency, we can come in and help these schools where they may have a need. So if they want to make their teachers better science, technology, engineering, math teachers, they'll come mm-hmm. to us and maybe we'll put them in a program like STEMAZING,
okay.
where it's going to really teach the teachers how to teach those curriculums to the highest level to impact the kids to the best of their ability.
Yeah.
Or maybe we'll switch directions and go into a leadership program where we're going to work with new aspiring leaders or principals or assistant principals. We put them in what's called a Lead Now program. Really, really intense leadership camp goes on for about 16 weeks. All of the programs and everything we can do is always located at schools.pima.gov.
Okay.
And that's also the first starting point that we would like the public to come and say, hey, if you want to get involved, or if you've got an idea, or you just want to talk education, schools.pima.gov is where you can come. You can find us. You can also find our handles on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram. And we really, really are just trying as hard as we can to build relationships right now in this community with our office
yeah.
and let them know that we want to be the education destination.
Yeah, totally. We're talking to Dustin Williams, Pima County School Superintendent. You know, if you're looking at what's happening in Pima County with education and you had to say, you know, what is the health of everything? Do you think it's healthy? You think it's doing well? I mean, in what ways could you make it better?
Ray, that's the phenomenal question. Because too often we do get caught up in the politics of education, and you hear all the downside.
Sure.
We've been in 180 schools since we've gotten elected. And so we spend a lot of time in these classrooms and talking with teachers and looking at campuses. And the one thing that we do see is some really, really great stuff going on. We see some really good teaching going on.
Yeah.
We see some conditions that are very challenging in some schools. And then you see other areas where they're not so challenging. So again, you have those burdens. But we're doing some great stuff. Teachers are really well prepared. Kids are trying really hard, and we're doing as good as we can do with what we have.
Yeah.
If we did have more, we could really, really be some big players in the state and start getting our rankings up into, you know, the high, hopefully the high 15s, high 20s. We're somewhere in the middle academically, but we're still near the bottom when it comes to investment in kids.
Yeah. It's interesting. I mean, it's kind of one of those things where, you know, at any level of work, you know, whether it's government, whether it's a private company, you have to make do with what you have. And if you can, you can be healthy. It just means that if you had more, you could do a lot better.
Well,
that's the basic premise.
Yeah, it is. And that's kind of some of the asks that we get. We run around in a different arenas, obviously, as elected leaders.
Mm-hmm.
And so you work a lot with business and economic development.
Sure.
And so we'll work closely with Pima County. And new businesses will come, and the number one ask that they come when we sit around at roundtable discussions is, the first question is, do you have the qualified personnel for us to go ahead and land here and call this home?
Yeah.
And so that's what we have to strive for in Arizona, is we have to make sure that we are producing qualified talent. And then number two, we got to figure out a way to keep that qualified talent here in Arizona and not take off to another state.
Yeah.
And the only way you can do all this stuff at the end of the day is with a phenomenal education system.
Mm-hmm.
So we're priding ourselves right now by bringing business in, and we're seeing some business come in. But to keep this business here, we're going to have to start delivering some people. And we have a major, major labor shortage out there right
now. Yeah.
And we have really missed the turn on career and technical education. We're behind on that. That's the area where we really need to step up. We've really got to fund our JTEDs. We really got to make sure that students know that there are so many options out there today, and they need to be aware of all their options.
Yeah. So what are some of the things that you guys are doing in the community this week, this month, coming up?
Man, this has been probably 13, 14-hour days.
Wow.
May is the month that is one of our tough ones.
Because you're finishing everything up, right?
Well, we're finishing everything up. So the office is interesting because it's 24-7. It literally goes all the time because of the finance and then the bonds, the overrides, and the admin part.
Mm-hmm.
But when the schools are ending, that's when it's all hands on deck. So our whole week has been celebrating kids from SARSEF coming to our office, to multiple speaking arrangements at different ceremonies, and really just wrapping up the year and encouraging our students that we're so proud of everything they've done.
Sure.
And watching the smiles on parents and the kids and all the nerves of how you see the eighth graders getting ready to go to possibly Ironwood.
Hey, that's where I went.
That's right. Okay.
Yep.
Maybe Ironwood. But it's a really neat time, and it's a message for everyone out there. If you know an educator, or you know someone graduating or promoting, give them a call, congratulate them, and tell them how happy you are for them, and thank them for that hard work. That goes a long ways.
Yeah, and if you had to look back at this year and talk about it a little bit, what would you say about everything that happened in the 2019-18 school year?
So if I look at the 18-19 school year, the first thing I say is we've got a big concern with teacher shortage. That one is something that we have got to get a handle on.
Yeah.
We look at side issues inside schools. We've got some vaping issues that we really got to look at as well. On the forefront side, I see the community getting stronger in all sorts of areas. I mean, right now we just partnered up with some supervisors, Sharon Bronson and I and Superintendent Dooley in Ajo School District. The water rates were going to go up. 500%, and that could have devastated an entire town. So to partner up with entire towns, and we got that voted down with the Corporation Commission. We're seeing big partnerships that are starting to evolve with our office. Also, the Pima County Health Department getting bringing in their resources to combat these issues on vapings. The economic development team at the Pima County in Pima County, bringing all these industries together, is really where we see the strength right now. So, it's been a great, great year. We look forward to next year. We're really, really happy that the governor's plan is intact.
Yeah,
we'd like to see, of course, some more investment in bringing those teachers to this state or getting them back in the field.
Yeah,
you know, we got about 100,000 certificates out there. We're using about 38% of them.
Yeah. Well, in spite of some of the challenges, sounds like you're pretty optimistic about what's coming down the line. So we're excited about that.
Well, I feel good, and I think it's good to feel good. And again, schools.pima.gov.
Good.
If you've got a chance, come on down to the office. We'd love to give you a tour and show you what we do.
All right. Dustin Williams, Pima County School Superintendent, thank you for being on the Buckmaster
Absolutely.
Show. Yeah, it's been a good time. And we will be back right after this. We'll be talking about a book that was just released about Ruth Rappaport. It's called A Well-Read Woman. And we'll be back on the Buckmaster Show. I'm Ray Allen, filling in for Bill.
All right.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley. This is Bill Buckmaster. Green Things has been the place for all things green for the Buckmaster household for many years. From 2-inch succulents to 10-foot tall palms and desert trees, Green Things has it all on 13 acres and 33 greenhouses full of plants, pottery, and gardening supplies. Visit Green Things at 3384 East River Road by the Rito Riverwalk and on the web at greenthingsaz.com.
This is Moa Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing.
And this is Bill Buckmaster. For several decades now, Moe has been my go-to expert for all my framing needs and bathroom mirrors. I trust Moe for service, professionalism, and top-of-the-line quality.
Thanks, Bill. Give us a call at 795-8226 and stop by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing on the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge, right next to Copenhagen, and on the web at moesgallery.com.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year, and if you are over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
Every day, your safety and freedom is protected by the service and sacrifice of our first responders and military. Please join us in this community effort to build the Southern Arizona Veterans and First Responders Living Memorial, a place to celebrate those who have paid the price for our freedom and those who continue to defend it today. Help create a space where these memories, past, present, and future, will live forever. Learn more and donate by visiting vfrm.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
All right, welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. It's 12:35. Ray Allen filling in for the vacationing Bill Buckmaster. This portion of the Buckmaster Show is presented by Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico, just 3 hours east of Tucson. So much to do and see in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico, like exploring the historic downtown Silver City or visiting the world-famous Cliff Dwellings National Monument, For a complete listing of the many things to do and the great places to stay, just visit the website southwestnewmexico.org. Well, Ruth Rappaport was only 10 years old when the Nazi Party came to power. She witnessed the fascist censorship take hold of her community and then watched her school, her synagogue, temple, and the forbidden books that she'd come to love burn. In the new book, A Well-Read Woman, The Life, Loves, and Legacy of Ruth Rappaport, Kate Stewart chronicles the extraordinary journey of Ruth's life. Kate Stewart is a third-generation librarian. She's born and raised in the Midwest, graduated from Vassar College with a Bachelor of Arts in History from the University of Iowa with a Master's degree in History and also in Library Science. She's worked as a librarian and archivist for ProQuest, the Library of Congress, and the U.S. Senate in Washington, D.C., and she's currently an archivist at the Arizona Historical Society in Tucson. A Well-Read Woman, The Life, Loves, and Legacy of Ruth Rappaport is her first book. Kate Stewart, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much for having me.
It's an interesting story that you've looked at here in the case of Ruth Rappaport, someone who had to endure a lot of hardship and a lot of difficult circumstances, but in the end came out really in a way, I wouldn't say on top, but doing what she loved for a reason.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, those stories, they go back to when she was a child. They affected her for the rest of her life. She really, the way that she took those experiences and turned them into something really meaningful later is really extraordinary. The way that not even when she was a child, but in other places in her life later on, she encountered instances of censorship and of things, you know, injustices that she felt were really wrong. And she always stood up against them. And, you know, when she became a librarian, that was one of the major things she was focused on, was making sure that everyone had access to the information and the books that they wanted.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about Ruth's life for a little bit. Give us a quick rundown of the life she lived, if you could, in a couple minutes.
Sure. It's kind of hard to sum up because she was all over the world and just, you know, encountered all these historical events. But yeah, from Nazi Germany, she went to Switzerland when she was a teenager, and that happened because she ran away from her parents because she did not want to live in Germany anymore. And she lived with foster families for about a year before she got a visa to the U.S. She had three uncles who lived in Seattle, so she ended up there and got very involved in the Zionist movement there and became a journalist, kind of worked her way up. And then eventually, you know, she went to Israel in 1948. Her sister was living there, and she knew it was this really momentous time to live there. And she kept this really extraordinary journal while she was there, this diary. Although she ended up kind of being very disillusioned with the state of Israel. She has a lot of really awful experiences there. And the way that she kind of turned her life around, though, was she realized she had to find something else to do, and that became librarianship for her and gave her this kind of new lease on life. So she came back to the U.S. and eventually finished college, became a librarian, went to eventually to Vietnam. She was a military librarian and went there in the early 60s. As the first librarian, there were no libraries there for the military yet, and ended up building this enormous system, way bigger than anybody had imagined. They were not really planning on the system being as big as she eventually made it, but she was so dogged about fighting for more funding for the libraries, for fighting for these men, that they had the right to read, you know, all kinds of material, not just kind of light fiction, but she wanted to make sure they had access to, like, novels about other wars and to make sure they had access to information and books about the Vietnam, like, what was happening at that moment. And also, you know, the books and magazines that were covering the anti-war movement at home, that she wanted to make sure they knew what was going on. And then she ended up at the Library of Congress starting in the early 70s and worked there for 25 years. And,
wow.
That's how I found out about her, was I was working there at the time, and one of my coworkers invited me to her estate sale. And it became this process of kind of uncovering her life over many years. And you know, I was really intrigued by her work as a librarian, but all these other really fascinating things just kept popping up.
So let's talk about that. You know, as a librarian yourself, there's this obvious connection between you and Ruth Rappaport, who was a librarian. You know, tell us about that connection. Tell us what it was like to put yourself in the shoes of someone who had to endure what Ruth endured. I know that when you were doing the research, you went through and you went to a lot of places. You had to do a lot of studying upon with her journals and her information. What was that like?
Yeah, it was really fascinating from the very beginning because, I mean, I knew what she did at work. You know, I knew yeah. I was doing it too. You know?
Yeah, you're a librarian.
And it's something, you know, I really identified with her concerning that stuff. But at the same time, she had just lived this incredible life that, you know, I knew I would never live. You know, I felt mm-hmm. like I've never done anything like the things that she's done. And that's what made her so fascinating to me was I was always wondering, how did she survive all these things? How did she get through it? And then the more I kind of investigated, the more I realized kind of the answer to that was books, you know, that reading banned books by Jewish authors was just, you know, hugely meaningful to her.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, later all the work that she did as a librarian was really her mission in life. And yeah, I decided kind of early on that I had to go visit these places. I went to Leipzig where she grew up. I went to Zurich. I went to Israel, to Jerusalem and Tel Aviv to see these places. Because she had described them so vividly, you know, in her diaries and letters. And I just felt like I have to go see these places. And of course, also there was relevant research to do in those archives there. So it was really wonderful adventure for me, who I was not very well traveled actually before I started this book. So it was a little bit, you know, I was nervous to go to some of these places, especially by myself. But it turned out to be just extraordinary for me. And I think really kind of enriched the book to be able to write kind of more vividly about those places.
I'm sure. I mean, it sounds like it was a fun time, but also an informative time for you as the author. We're talking to Kate Stewart. She's the author of A Well-Read Woman, The Life, Loves, and Legacy of Ruth Rappaport. Now, nearly every job that anyone works is going to have a component that is hoping to better society or make society a better place. You would at least hope there is. Does this put your job as a librarian into some sort of different perspective than it was before you studied Ruth Rappaport's life?
Yeah, it did. I mean, I've always thought, you know, that, you know, being a librarian, it's one of those professions that's often kind of thankless and underpaid.
Yes.
And people often don't really realize, I think, what we do all day. You know, you always get that, oh, don't you just read books all day? Really, you know, we have no time for that. And it's something that, you know, it's a job I've always really enjoyed. But however, reading all this stuff that she did, you know, especially these things like these angry memos that she wrote to her bosses, you know, that were preserved, or, you know, talking to other people who knew her and would tell me these stories like, oh, I can't believe it when she did, you know, blah, 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 that, you know, she really stood up to the man that time. And those stories to me just, they've really inspired me to think more critically about the work I do and, you know, how I interact with other people. You know, I work at the Arizona Historical Society now, and I really, whenever somebody comes in the door, I don't care who they are, I really want to help them. You know, I want to go the extra mile for them. It's really changed how I do my job. And I kind of have started to speak out more about things that I don't agree with. You know, I used to be kind of a very quiet person, but I don't know. In some ways, she's inspired me. It may not necessarily be a good idea, but
you
all
know,
the time. But
if you see something going on,
more,
that's wrong.
Yeah, exactly. I just want to speak up more. Yeah.
That makes sense. Here's a kind of maybe a curveball question that I wanted to ask you before we wrap it up. Have you ever seen the Twilight Zone episode, The Obsolete Man?
No, I haven't.
You should watch it. It's about a librarian.
Okay.
So I would highly recommend it. They're trying to ban books,
and
it's a fascinating show. I mean, I'm kind of a weird Twilight Zone fanatic, but you should do it. It's called The Obsolete Man, and it's about a librarian. You'll love it.
Okay, I'll do that.
Tell us about your work at the Arizona Historical Society, what you do there.
Sure. So I'm an archivist, and right now there's only two of us here. You know, we're kind of a very, you know, underfunded and understaffed institution.
Yeah.
So we really have to, you know, it's kind of like a jack-of-all-trades job. I do everything from, you know, helping people on the reference desk. I catalog and process collections. I do like outreach events and tours. I do like, you know, digitization of photographs, scanning orders. It's really just a hodgepodge. I feel like it's one of those jobs every day. I don't know how the day's really going to go.
Can't really plan
can
for
come
it,
up,
but,
you know?
But yeah.
But it's fun. I really love it. It's just the best.
Very cool. Well, it sounds like you enjoy what you do. This book Sounds like a good read. Again, we were talking about A Well-Read Woman, The Life, Loves, and Legacy of Ruth Rappaport by Kate Stewart. Go out and buy it. I'm sure that can they buy it on your website and Amazon and all those places? Tell us where to get it.
Yeah, Amazon. Also, I know it's available right now at Antigone Books.
Okay, yeah.
They're going to be at, I'm doing a book talk next week, next Thursday.
Oh, okay. Yeah, inform the audience what time and everything.
Sure. Yeah, that's going to be next Thursday, May 30th at 6 p.m. at the Dusenberry River Library. Okay. I wanted to do my book talk at a library.
Of course, it makes sense.
There's special places. And Antigone Books will be selling copies of the book there.
Very cool. Kate Stewart, thank you so much for being on the Buckmaster Show. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
No problem. Again, Kate Stewart is the author of A Well-Read Woman, The Life, Loves, and Legacy of Ruth Rappaport. She has that book signing coming up, and you can always get it online or locally at Antigone bookstores. Now, I want to talk again about Mona's Danish Bakery. If you haven't been out there for lunch or breakfast or just to get a Danish Kringle, you should go out there and do it. It's the best. Bill loves it. Everybody loves it. Mona's Danish Bakery is on the northeast corner of Sunrise and Swan. They're serving lunch right now. The lunch hour's kind of winding down and coming to an end, but it's a good time for you to maybe get in after the rush and get some food. Also, they're serving hot made-to-order breakfast every morning. If you want any more information, go to monasdanishbakery.com. Or you can go to buckmastershow.com and follow the link to Mona's Danish Bakery. We're going to be talking to the Desert Museum coming up next here on the Buckmaster Show. Ray Allen filling in for the soon-returning Bill Buckmaster. It's at 12:47.
Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com. The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year transportation plan is funded through June 2026 by a special taxing district, which is a state-established political subdivision within Pima County. The RTA plan and half-cent excise tax were voter-approved in May 2006, and the tax is collected within the district. More about RTA Citizens Advisory Committee's efforts to develop an RTA continuation plan at rtamobility.com.
Hey, it's Matt Russell from the Buckmaster Show.
And this is Ryan Hansen from Bon Voyage Travel.
I am so pumped to be partnering with Bon Voyage on my next culinary and cocktail cruise.
This is definitely a cruise for foodies as you experience the Mediterranean on celebrity cruises.
And the private excursions that your team has arranged for us? I mean, come on, an ouzo distillery tour in Greece? A food and wine day on Malta?
We'll handle everything, so all you and your guests need to do is eat, drink, and be happy.
Go to bvtravel.com/Matt Russell to learn more.
Let's say you need an honest roofer. Where do you start? Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona has more than 3,200 accredited businesses ready to help and committed to doing things right. Next time you need a trusted mechanic, plumber, AC company, or florist, go to our website, bbb.org, or call us at 520-888-6161. Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona. We are here to help you find local companies you can trust.
This is Bill Buckmaster. I love travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. And when you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. When more people fly Tucson, airlines respond with more flights. And with more flights, more travelers can get here to conduct important business. It's a win for the region, and it's a win for you in time saved and money saved not traveling to an airport 2 hours away. Travel smart and fly Tucson. Check out flytucson.com.
Good afternoon, Tucson. 12:50 on the Buckmaster Show here on 10:30. The voice trusted local news and talk. Ray Allen filling in for Bill, who's probably flying back from the Caribbean right now, and we are ready for Bill to be back. He'll be with us on Tuesday because we all have Monday off, of course, which is a wonderful vacation for us. But I got to tell you about Green Things before we get into the next segment. Since 1970, Green Things has been the go-to place for your gardening needs. Now Green Things has their 13-acre site, and it's home to the Zocalo Village and all of their fine Mexican and Latin American imports. Green Things on River Road just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. and on the web at greenthingsaz.com. Be sure to go visit Green Things and buy yourself some plants. Put them around the house or plant them in the garden. It's spring, and it's a good time to do that. Right now, welcoming Kat Rumbly, who is the marketing and group sales manager at the Arizona Sonora Desert Museum. Kat, welcome to the show. How you doing?
I am doing great. It's so good to hear from you.
I know it's been a while. It has been a little bit, but you know, it's fun to talk about what's happening over at the Desert Museum with you, because it's always good news, I feel like.
I feel like that's pretty accurate. Yeah. It's always good news, and it's fun things to talk about, and I know you're excited to come out for a few of our cool summer nights this summer.
I am, and I'll be there. It's going to be a great time. But before we get to what's happening this summer, we have to talk about the addition to the family. You guys have a new baby ocelot. I saw the pictures.
Yes.
Oh my goodness.
The pictures are so adorable. I want to say that was one of our most viral posts this entire year. If anybody is listening right now and hasn't seen the picture of this ocelot kitten, you can go to our Facebook page and check it out there. It will make you instantly smile. Cutest picture ever. Huge deal, because it was a collaboration between us, the Cincinnati Zoo, and also El Paso Zoo.
Okay.
I don't know if you got all this information, Ray, but between the three establishments, there were two litters of ocelots that were born following artificial insemination with frozen semen, which is crazy, because the first and last ocelot born following AI with frozen semen was born more than 24 years ago. So this is a huge conservation win, because ocelots are endangered.
Mm-hmm. And is this what is the name of this little ocelot?
This little ocelot actually doesn't have a name yet.
Okay.
We raffled that off in our silent auction at our annual fundraiser, the gala, last month. So someone donated $5,000 to name the ocelot. So we're waiting anxiously to hear what that $5,000 name is going to be.
Okay, cool. Now, tell us about, is it going to live there? Is it going to stay there? What's going to happen to it?
Yeah, so this ocelot kitten is most likely not going to stay at the Desert Museum. It's part of the species survival plan. So it will most likely be relocated to another facility where, it can be and put in a breeding program and things like that. So we'll be keeping everyone updated with the ocelot's progress. But even though you can't see the cute little ocelot, you can still come to the museum and see all of our other animals that are equally as cute and interesting.
Of course they are. That mountain lion is cute, but you know that if that glass wasn't there, it's kind of scary.
I mean, it could be. It could be.
Well, all right.
Ray, let me ask you this.
I'll answer. What do you got?
All right, what is your favorite animal at the Desert Museum?
Honestly, I think it is that, I don't know. I was going to say the mountain lion, but I feel like the bighorn sheep display is pretty awesome.
It is pretty awesome.
Because you walk right up to those things, and they are big, and they're just majestic on those rocks.
They are. They're so cool. My favorite animal changes all the time. I feel like everyone asked me that since I worked there.
Yeah.
When I first started, it was a Gila monster, because being from Florida, I was like, I don't know what this thing is, but it's awesome.
Yeah.
And now I'm kind of into the prairie dogs, because they remind me of myself. They just sit and eat.
Yes.
And kind of nap. It's really cool. So.
That's awesome. Oh, man. Okay. Well, you have a lot of stuff happening over there. So cool summer nights have already started, right? So
yeah.
Tell us about it. It's going all summer. Tell us about what's happening with Cool Summer Nights.
Yeah, so Cool Summer Nights is every year. The Desert Museum stays open at night, which if you haven't been during the day, obviously we recommend that you come during the day. But experiencing the museum at night is a totally different experience, and probably, in my opinion, almost a better one. I mean, they really are two different types of experiences.
Yeah.
We're open till 10 p.m.,
wow.
And each night has a different theme. So this Saturday is actually going to be astronomy night, which is really fun. It is a beautiful place to gaze at the stars. We're going to have Dr. Kevin Heinlein talking about 20 very common astronomy fallacies, so things that you may think are true but are actually definitely not. So you can walk out with a better knowledge and a plus license, which I'm assuming our listeners are
Yes, they all want to be
for that. that.
They all want more knowledge. If they're listening to the Buckmaster Show, they want more knowledge.
That's why they're here.
Yep, so exactly.
We also have Dino Night this year, which is going to be super fun. I'm hoping to have my staff dressed up in those inflatable dino costumes.
Oh.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yes, I do.
Have you seen those?
I have. They're everywhere. And people just take random pictures with them wherever they are. It's kind of funny.
Yeah. And also people do little battles, which I don't know if we can do for, you know, legality reasons. But
yeah, that might be.
That would make for an interesting thing. And we're also, your favorite one of the summer is Insect Insanity.
That's
I hope
it.
You're going to come to that one. Yep, July 27th. Mark it on your calendar. You get to see all of the amazing arthropods and incredible insects. You get to meet beetles and learn about these creatures that are sometimes misunderstood and why you shouldn't be afraid of them and how they help the environment. And Ray, I don't know if you're a Harry Potter fan, but if you are, well, are you?
What is it a fan of again? Say it again.
Harry Potter?
Oh, I'm going to be honest with you. I have not read any of the books.
Oh, man. Well, I'm so super excited because this summer we're doing a Harry Otter night.
Oh, wow. So okay.
Yeah.
I like that.
Super fun. Yeah, we're going to have a lot of different fun activities for kids, costume contests, you know, be your favorite witch or wizard, science potions, plant your own pot, things of that nature. So every Saturday night from 5 to 10 p.m., the Desert Museum's got something rocking.
Very cool. And you know, the neat thing about these, like I was going to say, Insect Insanity, you know, we went last year, and if you have kids and you want something to do, this is the perfect type of thing to bring your kids out there, that event or any of these events, really, to bring them out and to learn. And it's not only just that you get to have fun with your kids, but they actually get to be educated in the process. And the campus out there at the Desert Museum is just so beautiful, and especially coming up in July with the monsoons, it's great.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. And I'm just excited about the different themes we have this year. And also, if you're a Desert Museum member, every Cool Summer Nights is free, which is an incredible value. Yeah. So if you're looking for something to do during the summer, I mean, obviously we all know it's super hot, which it hasn't gotten that hot yet, which is very strange.
But, hey, I'm not complaining.
You know, me either. Not at all. It actually feels so beautiful outside. But once those 100-degree days come, it's nice to have a retreat from the heat, and we've got our new Pack Rat Playhouse exhibit as well.
Oh, yes. Now explain to the parents what exactly that is. Can parents go into?
Yeah, of course. I've gone down that slide.
I'm sure.
It's scary. It's really fast.
Wow.
But Pack Rat Playhouse is our newest exhibit, opened over a year ago, and it's basically Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, but Desert Edition, and kids can go inside and, you know, climb on prickly pear cactus pads, obviously not real, and just they can climb two stories up and get a bird's eye view of the museum, and it's just an interactive kids play place where they get to see the world, see the desert through the eyes of the pack rat. So honestly been a game changer for us.
I'm sure.
Before that, we didn't really have too many exhibits that were primarily focused for children. So this one, I mean, this is a place where you can take your kids and they can run wild.
Yeah. Kat, it's been a good time. We have to run, unfortunately, but thank you so much for coming on and telling us about the Ocelot and what you guys have going on this summer.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, Ray. I'll talk to you later.
All right, see you soon. Bye-bye. Thank you, Bob, for doing the board for me. Thank you to all the guests who are on the Buckmaster Show today. And thanks to Bill for allowing me to sit in his seat. This is big shoes to fill. And we'll see him next week. Tomorrow, of course, wrapping up the week for our Friday. Now we have more local talk. 10:30, The Voice.